Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Here we go with the Media Project, folks. It's a half hour of commentary, analysis, and perhaps even some insight into news media issues of the week from Albany, New York. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here in the studios at WAMC with Rosemary Armeo.
How are you?
I think I'm okay. Rosemary is the director of the journalism program at the University of Albany, investigative journalist for many years, and in his secure, undisclosed location in the Berkshire Mountains of Massachusetts, there's Dr. Alan Shartok. What do you say, Al?
I say, my mother said, never let anybody call you Al. As soon as I say that on the air, I get 14 emails saying, how you doing, Al?
Yeah, it's like poor Stan Lundeen. Remember when he was lieutenant governor and he hated it when people called him Stanley?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And he would say, no, it's Stan, because he was convinced he was going to be the governor, I think.
Ah.
And he knew that Stanley was not a gubernatorial accessible name. So I think he insisted on Stan. At least that was my theory.
You know, in my youth, when I worked for a congressman, his first opponent when he ran for re-election was a guy whose name was Bill Irwin. But for election purposes, he decided it was stronger to be known as Will.
Oh, you poor boys.
We need
we women would have to fight to keep our own name. My first job out of college, my boss insisted that I be using my husband's name, even though none of my paperwork was. No one can pronounce it, including my ex-husband. And there I was. For purposes of journalism, my byline, my first few years of bylines have this fake name on it.
Huh. What do you know? Mm-hmm. Actually, the New York Times used to have this byline rule. They didn't want women to use multiple names.
That, like, hyphenated names?
Hyphenated, or even to use, like, my wife uses her maiden name as a middle name.
Right.
And the Times didn't allow that until a reporter who was a great favorite of the managing editor got married, and he changed the rule. Well, you know, these are the rules. What can you do?
Hey, Rex.
Yes,
Alan. Hey, Rex, I hear you got a huge shout-out from an online program. Tell us about that.
Actually, there's this terrific podcast from Slate that gave a great shout-out to the Media Project. But they took issue. They said that, you know, what it lacks in superficial... Anyway, it said that we lack...
Production.
Yeah, we're not superficial enough.
Yeah.
That's Alan's territory.
I know. Isn't that something?
Sweet, Rosemary. Sweet.
So what can you do?
Not a knock, Alan. I mean, we need more Fire Island.
Yeah. No, it's this it's this wonderful podcast on Slate called Culture Gabfest. And it's actually a swell weekly thing. And one of the participants, a guy named Steve Metcalf, dropped a glowing review saying that, however, we lack superficial cleverness and savvy. I've always had confidence in my superficiality. I thought that was one of my great strengths.
That means like we're too profound?
Isn't that amazing?
So exactly what did he like?
He likes our sobriety and perspective instead.
I need a drink.
So much for sobriety. Anyway, what can you? Thank you very much to the good folks at Slate, and specifically to Stephen Metcalf, who liked us in his podcast and subscribed to the podcast. We'll return the favor, right? It's
absolutely
a very clever thing. Here's an interesting piece of mail from a listener. Kitty writes to us and says, this morning on Morning Edition, the reporter kept discussing Obamacare. There have been multiple surveys showing that there's a disconnect among the general population in that they do not understand that Obamacare equals the Affordable Care Act. The two different names are the same thing. Doesn't it make sense for the news media to use the appropriate term so listeners truly understand what is being discussed?
Wow.
Discuss, class.
I think someone who can't grasp that Obamacare is a Republican nickname, sobriquet, that Obama himself accepted for ACA should not be allowed to vote. That's kind of minimal intelligence, don't you think?
But it's wow. rampant. One of the night shows, one of the evening shows, it might have been when Colbert actually was still doing the previous program, and he went out into the street and interviewed people. What do you think is better, the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare? And a number of people said, no, I think the Affordable Care Act is a better policy. And wow. why is that? Well, because it's affordable. So the point of Dr. Kitty here, she's PhD, MPH. That does not mean miles per hour, by the way. That's master's in public health. Just wanted to let you know I'm
You're
on top
getting
of
up
these
that
things.
Quotient of superficiality. That's good, Rex. That's very good.
But I think...
we got to work on that.
Yeah, we got to work on that. So I don't have a good answer to that. Does it make sense? I think the terms actually it would help for them to be interchangeable. It would help for us to use them both in context, don't you think?
Yeah, but I think there's another issue here, and that is, I don't know how to say this, and I don't know how to say it without alienating people who are not in our audience, who are the smartest people in the world. But there are a lot of dumb people out there. I mean, you know, you go and you ask somebody who the vice president of the United States is, right? Mm. Go out in front of WAMC and ask the first 30 people who pass who's the vice president. And you'll get a lot of giggles and mouth coverings and things like that people don't know. And that is a big problem because the name of the show is The Media Project, right? That's a big problem for the media, that people, a lot of people, don't know a thing.
Don't know a thing. That is a problem. Actually, speaking of the vice president, what was the newspaper that had the unfortunate headline problem of getting the vice president mixed up with General Flynn? That was
In words or in pictures?
In words, yeah. Mm. It's a correction problem. It was the Eagle, which is in Bryan College Station, and the Texas newspaper's top headline on February 21st incorrectly indicated that Lieutenant General McMaster would be replacing Vice President Mike Pence.
Ooh, wow.
Rather than Michael Flynn. All these Michaels and Stevens around there. I wonder what it is about that.
Mm-hmm.
Too many.
Anyway.
That's
too...
an unfortunate error. That's the kind of thing that brings a lot of calls to the editor, right, Rex?
Yeah. Yeah, some days I say that my job is really kind of like being the adjustment window at Macy's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the kind of thing that we ought not to tolerate, up with which we should not put. So... Speaking of what people think, there is a survey just out that says that 73% of voters oppose eliminate federal funding for public television. I presume that might apply to public radio as well. Now, just this one caveat, that is a survey that was commissioned by PBS. But 73% of voters oppose eliminating federal funding. What do we think of that?
Suspect poll.
Mm. Well,
right. And a lot of it depends on who's asking the questions, of course, and how they're asking them. So do you agree that Sesame Street is an incredibly important question before? Do you agree that money should not be given to PBS? You know, the context of where the question is, how it's asked. And I think Rosemary's absolutely right. It is questionable. It's suspicious.
I think we in the media have to be careful of how we promote polls or not. But even if you accept it, that the poll results are right and the vast majority of Americans believe in funding for public broadcast, you might say the same about gun regulation. You might say the same about release of the president's tax records. That does not mean Congress is going to do a single thing about it.
Hmm.
In many ways, public opinion doesn't matter anymore.
That's interesting because it can be so easily manipulated. In part, right?
Yes.
And I think Rosemary's point about the connection between what polls say and what politicians do is also a very important one because, remember, we have a Congress that is seriously gerrymandered. So if you get a congressman, a bunch of Republican congressmen who come from gun-toting states and are there not because they're representative of the whole state, but because some people in the legislature figured out how to get more Republicans into congressional districts, then obviously you're right, Rex and Rosemary, that there isn't a direct connection between what people are thinking and what politicians are doing.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what I think is one of the great media issues of the week, and it's sort of a 48-hour news cycle in the aftermath of the president's state of, well, it was not a State of the Union, but the president's address to Congress. which provoked quite a lot of commentary saying this was really a terrific speech and so on. Chris Wallace of Fox, of course, said one of the best speeches in that setting I have heard any president give. A number of people used the phrase, this is the night that Donald Trump became the president. Breitbart called it a sensational address. That's not surprising. And even people who would ordinarily be considered hostile to Donald Trump said that it was a good and polished speech. So then day two comes along and you see a lot of commentary saying the press is rolling over for the president. What's the truth here?
I think it was the best speech Donald Trump has ever given as a politician. Now, what does that mean? He's never given a good one before. This one he read from a teleprompter, and it was set up in a way that it didn't look like he was reading. That's new. He stayed on message. It was mostly optimistic, except for the part where he talked about immigrants being mostly killers and slashers. It was on point on many of the messages that he wants both Congress and people to pay attention to. There was that whole scene with the grieving military widow that was disgusting. And I think that the press generally played it that way. When I read over and I listen to the whole speech and listen to the comments later, I thought they said all those things. It came out as, oh, you're gushing. The people who don't like Trump didn't like that. The media said anything good about him. And we may have deserved it because we kept saying all through the campaign, here's where it changes. This is the pivot. Now we're going to see the real guy who can be president. I don't think he has pivoted yet. I think he made one good speech. It's not a lie to say that was a good speech.
Well, you know, I think the press fell for it. Rosemary had a very interesting experience. Somebody wrote on her Facebook, I believe. Now let's see what the dirtbags at public radio have to say about this.
Have them knock it down.
And, I'm the head dirtbag. And here's what I'm really thinking. That is that Trump may have given a better speech from the loquacious point of view. I know that I tell too many stories of my childhood. And not on
really?
Fire Island, Rosemary.
Really? You do?
But at Hunter College, I had to take speech.
Oh, yes, Hunter College.
And everybody in the class came from the Bronx, except for me. I was from Manhattan.
And so you were the excellent student there? Were you the top of the class?
I was. I was. I could talk about anything. I'd talk about my foil. I was taking fencing class or whatever else, and I'd always get an A. You see? So I think that's what happened with Trump in this case. He gave a good speech. He didn't deviate, but the message was still terrible. And I think that the press fell for it. In other words, everybody said, well, this is the best speech of his life and this and that. Nevertheless, he's still talking about climate. He's still talking about, you know, immigration. He's still talking about all that stuff. And it scared the hell out of me.
Well,
I think that's where the press fell for it.
He didn't actually mention climate at all, which as a liberal and a Democrat, of course, I just hate. But he's speaking to...
Exactly.
He's speaking to more than just liberals.
In the center of the front page of the Washington Post, the headline said, Trump gives his hardline campaign promises a more moderate tone in address to Congress. So, of course, it's a very lucky copy editor who gets that many words on a headline. Usually you only get four or five words, but gives his hardline campaign promises a more moderate tone. So that's an accurate way of putting it.
Brian Williams from MSNBC, who I like listening to because he's also an out-it liar, said about the speech that it was the same Steve Bannon content but wrapped around a Reince Priebus tone.
Exactly my point. And by the way, to answer that point about actually he didn't talk about climate change, yes, by not talking about climate change, he was talking about climate change.
Yeah, that's
asbestos
true.
Asbestos from Gunsmoke was... As Festus from Gunsmoke would say, don't you see?
Is that what he said?
I dispute the idea that the media fawned over the speech, which is exactly the headline on this story by media critic James Warren that you gave us. Trump's big speech spawns marathon of media fawning. That isn't true. And if you discount the far right press, Breitbart certainly fawned. But everybody else pointed out flaws in the speech. I did mention that it was the first good one he ever gave, which is rather a severe criticism since the man's been in the public eye for 2 years. I thought they did all right. I think he did all right. It doesn't mean anything. And in fact, today, one day after the speech, he's embroiled in more scandal and controversy.
I think that's actually quite a significant point, that the news cycle runs so fast. And in fact, it's a remarkable situation you have, because oftentimes you get sort of a drip, drip, drip of news coming out. The Trump administration's an absolute fire hose. There is news constantly coming out of Washington since Donald Trump has been president. Some of it manufactured by the White House when he does all these executive orders. But when you get information like the Attorney General Jeff Sessions having not disclosed his contacts with the Russian ambassador during his confirmation hearing, that's big news. And the White House may try to put a cap on things. For example, we know that they had intended to roll out the day after his speech to Congress the new immigration ban. Instead, they decided, let's put that off so that we can bask in the glow of the good speech and not step on our own story. That is information management that you expect to see in a sophisticated operation, a sophisticated political operation like a White House, but that often you don't have in the Trump White House, because they fall all over themselves. There's too much going on. The president makes more news than he intends to, right?
Mm-hmm. So,
I think you lost the lead there, Rick. I mean, this business with the Russians and Sessions could be the end of the Trump presidency. I believe this is like a big ball of yarn is going to unravel and unravel and unravel. And the important point for the Media Project is it's the press that's finding it. And the more he alienates the, quote, enemies of the people, the harder they're going to work. Don't you think, Rosemary?
There are a lot of stories coming out now. In addition to the Sessions story, we have Wilbur Ross, just newly confirmed as Commerce Secretary, who's involved in a real estate deal that Donald Trump supposedly made with Russian oligarchs. So, yeah, I think that there's a lot coming out. There's a lot of pressure on Congress to investigate. And now Sessions has complicated it. I don't know that this will be what knocks him out, but certainly the pressure now for an independent investigator strengthens. And as soon as you've got, as soon as this information begins moving from the intelligence community to Congress, watch for the leaks. And so, yeah, there's a lot more to come. It's a challenge for a communications director in this White House. Absolutely.
Don't you think you have a little bit of sympathy for him, huh?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. You know, explain something to me that I don't quite understand. One of the stories has emerged is that Obama administration officials near the end of the administration seeded information all over the bureaucracy and various agencies about the Russian contacts.
Right.
It was that, in other words, to create multiple sources for reporters?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Apparently so.
Yeah, apparently they were afraid that under the new White House, information would be lost. And in the same way, you have these data banks being set up by private people who want to make sure climate data, for example, is not lost when we now have an administration that doesn't believe in climate change. So in the same way, this information was put in various places and seeded. Definitely an act of hostility to be expected, considering how rancorous the election was. It also is the reason that the Republicans, one of the reasons they're so quick to dismiss anything we hear. That's not real proof. That's just politics. They have a point with that. It would be lovely if all of this were being handled by the intelligence agencies and investigative agencies. But that went out the window with James Comey and his two announcements on Hillary Clinton. And the Democrats are playing just as dirty now, I think.
So a very interesting question is, this stuff you're talking about is very heady. We're talking about national security. We're talking about Putin. We're talking about these kinds of things that could come up and really take a bite out of our rear end. However, what makes the news seems to be, again, Kellyanne Conway. And I don't quite get it. The black college presidents are in the Oval Office. Kellyanne gets on the couch and stands up in order to take some pictures, and she becomes the whole news cycle. Is it because she showed a little leg? Is it because it was too informal and she took her shoes off? What seems to be the big issue here?
Hatred. This was a social media issue, I think, rather than a traditional media. The picture of her sitting on top of her knees on
her legs tucked under her on the couch. Yeah, there is an interesting point to be made that here is counselor to the president in you can't picture Steve Bannon even in that situation. You can't picture other senior aides to the president. kind of kneeling on their knees on the couch to snap a picture with a cell phone of the visit of the HBCU presidents to the Oval Office. I think there is some, it's not a big story, but it is revealing as to, I think, an element of sexism, that this is the woman in the room, and she's the one that they put over on the sofa to take the picture of
people. Wow, now I'm usually the one quick to jump on sexism. I don't see it here. And in fact, President Obama took some heat when he was new to the Oval Office and turned into it without a jacket on. He just had his shirt sleeves. That was stupid. Michelle Obama took heat when she posed for an official White House photograph in a sleeveless dress, which now, of course, Trump has made the uniform of his Trump ads. But this kind of change in attitude and formality offends people. I don't think it means anything. And there's plenty to complain about with Kellyanne's behavior and ethics. Kneeling on the couch is not one of them.
Well, what's interesting is that I was up very early as we speak, and I watched, you know, the what they do now on NBC and MSNBC is they put the guys who were making fun of Trump on, you know, the comedians on the first thing when they open up the program, 5 o'clock in the morning. There it is. And there were some that showed Kellyanne, you know, basically splayed out on the couch, showing an awful lot. And not only are we what we're appropriate in what we're talking about here about Kellyanne, but we're also saying that those people we talked about earlier, who I said were basically dumb, there were a lot of dumb people in America, they think this is the real thing. This is the message that they're getting. And so those comedians have tremendous impact.
Yeah, that is true. And that is sexist. And of course, it's meant with artistic intent to kind of exaggerate to the point that you laugh at it. But you're right. It does leave an impression with people who don't watch the news but do watch the comedy shows.
Yeah, pretty. Actually, sometimes the humorous efforts are misunderstood. I have a very bright young nephew, as a matter of fact, a kid who has went to a good college, and he has my brother reported that his son was very concerned because he had read an essay saying that Dr. Ben Carson has no memory of running for president. He said, boy, this is the guy just doesn't have any. And I said, what's the byline on that? Well, the byline was the humor writer in the New Yorker. And of course, it was meant to be a spoof. But it is often misunderstood, even by people who you would think are more sophisticated.
These are the same people who don't know that ACA and Obamacare are the same thing. We have a theme going here today.
Yeah. Okay, here's an interesting point that we need to bring up, and that is the question of whether the media are buying in so heavily to this public fascination with lists. You know, we talk about listicles, and of course, that's what made some of the websites famous. The U.S. News and World Report is most famous for its college rankings, right?
Yes.
And college presidents and administrators all will tell you that it's the bane of their existence, except for the colleges that come out number one on the many, many ways that they break down their lists. But now U.S. News and World Report has unveiled state-by-state rankings of states themselves, assessing the 50 states.
Yeah, very important.
How about that?
Very important. Let me just start by saying, as an academic, and as Rosemary is, you're not. we have always had raised eyebrows about, at least I have, about the U.S. News and World Reports. I've seen some real stinkers coming up to the top, and I don't know how they do it. I don't know whose uncle is who, but all I know is some of them are really ridiculous. But in the case of the state by state, they are on target. They have chosen Massachusetts. They've chosen Massachusetts, where I live, where I'm speaking to you from now. Tears are coming out of my eyes of gratitude for this wonderful gift.
It's fraudulent. They list North Dakota as number four, and as a son of South Dakota, I can tell you North Dakota doesn't deserve that. All right.
Where's New York?
New York is 17th because of, and California is 23rd, just FYI. Anyway, so this is, they have us talking about them.
That's exactly right. I love lists.
We're talking about it. Yep, love lists. Okay, that's it. Alan, we're out of time. You can go back and take a nap now.
I once had a love list.
Oh, boy. Alan Chartok there. Rosemary Ermeo. I'm Rex Smith. Thanks for joining us this week on The Media Project.
Now, newspapermen are such interesting people.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. And Rosemary Armeo is the director of the Journalism Program at the University at Albany. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.